Let's get some fire for our Thursday. We're going to dominate today. We're going to earn that pillow tonight. And come tomorrow. Golf and beer and family. That's what we do on a Friday. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. You have found the only podcast in the world totally devoted to covering the four major sports franchises of one major market, plus all of the minor league sports in that market, and it comes on your phone every weekday morning in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, my name's Doug. This is nice of you. Good to spend a Thursday with you. I have a lot to go over, and a lot of information. There's a lot of stuff going on right now that you need to be a part of, both sports-wise and in our standard introduction. If you're new to Doug Franz Unplugged, I do feel like I'm reaching out and getting to see new people or introduce myself to new people that then give them opportunities to find out that this podcast is available to them. This is how it works. Unless I have a crazy story about Costco that takes me 15 minutes to tell, I try to spend about 5 to 10 minutes just having a beer with you at the beginning of the podcast, talking to you about my life. Feel free to tweet me, tell me about your life. And then we do the 4-minute offense. And the goal for me is for you to always be able to listen to the 4-minute offense. And even if that's all you get to that day, you're able to listen and hear what's going on with everything to do in Phoenix that's vitally important for you to know, sports-wise. And then it becomes a long-form talk show where I try to have some guests if I think a guest has a little information that we don't have, or I sit down and pull sound from different teams and give you more of an in-depth look at what happened last night and what's about to happen in other situations. So that's welcome if you're new. That's what the Unplugged Army has been listening to since the beginning of January. I had a great conversation with a local radio company today about the Cardinals podcast. If you weren't listening last week, I got approached by a national company that has ties locally to do a Cardinals podcast. And I'm a little nervous because they aren't giving me the money that I'd like to if I'm going to devote that much time to it. So that makes me nervous. But I think it has a chance to grow, and oh my gosh, did this local company seem gung-ho about it. So that might happen, but just remember, I'm going to need you to keep going. I'm asking an awful lot of you. I mean, in order for this to happen, I need you to watch Props Arizona presented by Betfred Sports. I need you to listen to Doug Franz Unplugged every day. And if you're not, if those two things aren't going hand in hand, I'm done. I mean, you have the right, of course, do what you want. But then I'm done doing this, and that would be just heartbreaking considering what I've put into it so far. However, I feel like I got to be careful to spread you too thin, and I'm afraid doing a Cardinals podcast might do that. But if I get a lot of support that might actually help me with this one, oh, then I'm in on that one. So that's number one. Number two, I'm pretty jacked up about this. The Diamondbacks are so easy to work with. I'm going to the Diamondbacks game. It's tonight at 6 o'clock. I'm going 5 hours early. That's when a lot of the players get there, and they're going to try to line me up with some player interviews. I am so jacked up about this to bring some real fresh content and dive deep into some of the players. So I'm not going to air them all tomorrow, but I'll spread them out throughout the week of next week. So do whatever you can to listen to next week, and I think we'll have some great Diamondbacks conversations next week. Hopefully they don't blow leads like they did Sunday and yesterday. Pretty annoying. I just mentioned it. Today is the day that Props Arizona, presented by Betfred Sports, drops. Please try to find time to watch that with Papa Bear Sean and me. And I also had a guest appearance on my boss's show, Bostonian versus the Book. If you get a chance to watch that, I think you'll really enjoy it. They surprised me, and it's kind of weird. I'm my own boss's mentor from a long time ago, but when I say mentor, I say it loosely. He didn't need much from me. But I used to do afternoons in Huntsville, Alabama. My Props Arizona boss did mornings. And then a friend of mine from college did middays. So they brought my college friend on, and it was the three of us telling hilarious stories about the South, living in the South, doing sports talk radio in the South. So if you want to enjoy a little bit of my history, I think you'll enjoy that. We didn't really get into something where it's breaking sports-wise, but he kept it mostly Arizona. He was driving. And so there's a lot of Arizona topics in that show. You might enjoy it a lot. And part one of our next event has been finalized, not part two. So Papa Bear Sean was in charge of it, and it's going to be July 22nd. There's a place on Price on the Far East Side called Parlay, or the Parlay Kitchen, I think it is. So we're going there for happy hour Friday, July 22nd. As of right now, golf is not scheduled yet, but he's trying to get that scheduled beforehand. So number one, if you're just stopping by happy hour on the East Side, please forgive me if I smell, because I'm going to try to play golf that morning and then head over. But I'd love for you to try to put that on your calendar, figure out a way for you to try to stop by July 22nd, happy hour on the East Side at Parlay. 4 Minute Offense is up next. And boy, we got a lot of stuff to go over. Kind of a rapid fire show today on Doug Franz Unplugged. Did you call yet? 602-899-7000. I've been telling you about Ideal Home Loans for years now. They have the mortgage on my home. It's easy for me to say the number over and over again, 602-899-7000. We chose them because, well, I had a friend that said they're good. That was really it. But then when I got to know them, the president, Brent, and talking to him, I realized this is what we want. I appreciated the way Joel, who was our actual guy that handled the loan as a loan officer, listened to what we had to say. That's why I made up the phrase, first they listen, then they lend. The reason why that matters is, let's say right now you're a little nervous because of interest rates, but you've got some bad credit card debt, and maybe your car's getting a little old. This is an amazing opportunity. Housing prices are not only stabilizing, they're just barely starting to come back down the mountain a little bit. That means you're losing the equity in your home. That's money you're losing, but you can call Ideal Home Loans before it's gone. 602-899-7000 or go to idealhomeloans.com.
Four minute offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in downtown Phoenix. Diamondbacks are losers 7-5, despite having a good 4-0 lead early in this game.
We got an outstanding pitching performance by Merrill. Yeah, we just made some mistakes. They matched up against us, and we got clipped. That happens in this game.
That's manager Torey Lovello talking about the 6 1/3 innings pitched by Merrill Kelly. He only gave up 2 earned runs, struck out 6.
Obviously, it's frustrating. You know, kind of what Gallen said the other day, it's like those are type of games that if we're trying to get to where we want to be, those are definitely games that we have to win.
So the team blows a win for Zach Gallen on Sunday, and Zach challenges his teammates, hey, these are the types of games we have to hold on to and win. Well, now it happened again yesterday, and there's Merrill Kelly saying the same thing. But the D-backs started off hot.
Base hit for Thomas. Herrera's home. Here comes Rojas. Alec Thomas makes it 4-0 Diamondbacks.
That's Alec Thomas with a 2-run single in the second that gave the Diamondbacks a 4-0 lead they couldn't hold. Herrera went 2-for-3 on the day.
Buddy.
Kennedy went 2-for-4 along with Ketel Marte. So the bats were fire at the beginning, a bunch of crap in the middle, and outstanding at the end. But they couldn't do what Darren Ruff could.
He doesn't punch that one anywhere except for into the bleachers. It's gone.
Giants leave town, Rockies enter, beginning of a 4-game series, tonight 6:40. Dallas Keuchel will try to lower his massive 9.64 ERA for the Diamondbacks. Austin Gomber goes for the Rockies. Two pieces of Coyotes news you want to know, the schedule and the draft. The Arizona Coyotes got the most obnoxious schedule I have ever seen in sports. They start the season on a 6-game East Coast road trip. They have their home opener October 28th against Winnipeg, the start of a 4-game homestand. Then they go on a 14-game month month-long road trip before they come back to their new digs at ASU. Yes, I said 14 games. NHL draft today, 4 o'clock. Coyotes pick third behind Montreal and the Devils. You want my guess? They go center. Logan Cooley from the U.S. national team. If he's off the board, do you want to go offense or defense? It'll either be Slavkovsky, the left winger out of Finland, or defenseman Simon Nemec from Slovakia. First round tonight, rounds 2 through 7 tomorrow. Suns news. It's official. Devin Booker has signed his Supermax contract. Devin was drafted in the year 2015 at 18 years of age. He is now signed through 2028 and will become an unrestricted free agent once again at age 31, hopefully spending his whole career with the Phoenix Suns. Suns Summer League starts tomorrow. They take on the Lakers Friday at 7. Speaking of signing max contracts, despite a litany of issues since he was drafted number one overall, Zion Williamson signed a contract extension with New Orleans. The entire time he spoke at a press conference was just repeating the word thank you to a lot of people.
Like, most of all, like, thank y'all for really sticking with me the past year.
The latest on the Pac-12. It looks like it's boiling down to two options for Arizona State. Stay in the Pac-12 and then join forces with the ACC on joint scheduling, or jump to the Big 12. U of A, Colorado, Utah probably stays with ASU no matter what. WNBA. They play fewer minutes than the NBA, and therefore triple-doubles are rare. Last night, Ionescu, 31 points, 13 boards, 10 assists. New York beat Las Vegas 116-108. Why do you need to know that? Because Ionescu's next stop is Phoenix tonight, 7 o'clock, Liberty versus Merck. And finally, do you want to move to Kalamazoo, Michigan? That's the home of Western Michigan University. They've decided to decriminalize certain things that happen on the college campus. Littering, abandoning refrigerators, and public urination. Which is important if Costco doesn't have toilet paper.
That's just gross. That's the only way that that you could put it. I'm from Ohio, but I went to Ohio University. That's in the same conference as Western Michigan in Kalamazoo. So I have been there multiple times covering Ohio baseball and Ohio women's basketball. I used to be the play-by-play voice. And I just laugh at that idea. They said it used to be a misdemeanor, so that's punishable by fine and jail. And they want to knock it down to some kind of like violation of an ordinance, and then you can just be fined and go on your way. They don't want to put you in jail anymore for peeing. But I don't know. I just can't get over decriminalizing litter and urination. I would say no. I think that's still good. I think those are two things that we could still put you in jail for. Just for a night. You know, nothing horrible, but I don't think you want to support. No. That's all right. Go ahead and pee right here. Cost you $100, but go ahead and pee right here. I don't know. I kind of agree with putting a drunk college kid in jail for the night for that. Maybe not an older person, but yeah, I know someone's going to yell, oh, you can't treat the college kid different. You know what? Yes, you can, actually. Yeah, I actually think you can. Sound credits. Thanks a lot to Bally Sports Arizona. It's where I got the play-by-play from and the Merrill Kelly and the Tory from. I didn't get to my... I have Tiger and Rory sound that I want to get to. It was going to be in the four-minute offense, but there was no place to put it. I ran out of time. I got to get better at the four-minute offense. I'm spending too much time on one subject sometimes, usually the lead subject. So sorry about that. I need to move more and get you more information from other events. But I do want to spend some time talking golf late in the show. And MLB.com gave me the play-by-play of the Darren Ruff home run. And I got ESPN.com, if you're interested, had good Tiger sound, good Rory sound, and I got the Zion sound from them. Basically, I still think the Kevin Durant situation and as it relates to DeAndre Ayton is the number one story. So I hate to spoil the fun here, but basically this first hardcore sports segment, beautiful part of the program, beautiful part of the podcast, obviously, here on Doug Franz Unplugged, is going to be devoted to this until DA and KD are either settled down or at a new place. And sometimes it'll be hardcore type stuff. Sometimes it'll be pretty soft and I'll move on, but it'll always be number one. Let me give you what I know as the latest as of now. It's not going to move the needle for you. I don't want to lie to you, but it's kind of important. Number one, the Brooklyn Nets are not in a hurry at all to move Kevin Durant. They want to slow play this thing. Now, the reason why this matters, they're hopeful Kevin Durant can change his mind. Okay? So that's number one. Just slow play it. See if you get lucky and he changes his mind. They're also hoping it adds pressure to everybody else. Hey, you guys want to get this thing done with DA? You want to get this thing over here? Let's spend some time talking about this and let's just figure it out piece by piece. What is huge is the real point of the Vegas Summer League gets underway today. Okay? There's a couple games today and then it, like, just about everybody plays tomorrow. Suns included. They're taking on the Lakers tomorrow. Now, this is why that matters. Everybody in the league is in Vegas. So it's going to be easier instead of simply, hey, I'm calling you and then I'm calling you and then I'm doing the Rockets here and then I'm doing you. Okay, let's set up a three-person Zoom. You got the link here. You got the link here. Now it's going to be three guys going to dinner. Now it's going to be three guys sitting at the bar drinking and talking about it. Now it's going to be walk right into a room. Hey, here's my hotel room. Okay. And you get a lot more interaction. It'll be a lot easier to get something done, I think, in this setting. Once you didn't get it done in the beginning, just wait for Vegas and get it done in Vegas. And this time what happens in Vegas will actually come out of Vegas, and it could be Kevin Durant if that works. Also, Brooklyn wants to take it slow because they're thinking somebody might just simply up their offer as we wait this out. Okay, you got us. We're going to go higher now. So that's as it relates to Brooklyn. Not in a hurry at all. My opinion on Kevin Durant is I think, and I disagree with Bobby Marks, what he said yesterday on ESPN, on yesterday's show. It was actually 2 days ago that he said it. He's got Toronto as his number one ranking of teams that couldn't get Kevin Durant. And he's going by the package of players that will go to Brooklyn. I don't believe Brooklyn will trade Kevin Durant to a team Kevin Durant won't play for. The Spurs did not negotiate with Kawhi Leonard, to my knowledge. I could be wrong on this. I'm not reporting. But I think I remember that they didn't care what Kawhi thought. Fine, you don't want to be here? We're trading you. We've chosen Toronto. It doesn't matter that you want to go to one of the LA teams and be closer to your home. We're trading you where we think we get the best deal. They sent him to Toronto. He wins a championship, becomes an unrestricted free agent, signs the huge deal with the Clippers. It's really not the same, I think, with Brooklyn. Brooklyn does care deeply about, okay, what's going to be the biggest prize that we can get? There's no doubt about that. And that's what matters the most to them. But I do believe that you're not going to get that big of a package if Kevin Durant isn't committed to you. It's easy to say, hey, if Rudy Gobert is worth four first-round picks and four players, really five players, because one of them just got drafted, if you're that confident that you're worth more, that the Rudy Gobert price tag should be below your price tag, well, no one's going to pay that price if they're only getting a rental. If Kevin Durant's just going to throw a fit and want to leave the very next year. So if you're going to do this trade, you want to talk to KD first and you want to make sure KD's committed. That's why I'm not going with Toronto like other people are as a possibility. Oh, I should say that. I take them as a possibility, but not number one. I'm going to put it in the ranking order that I feel like Kevin Durant is. Suns number one. Sorry to drive you nuts and bring it up again, but we might have somebody that missed the last couple shows. There's no doubt in my mind he wants to be a Sun, and it's not, Devin Booker's not the number one reason. Chris Paul's not the number one reason. I think Monty Williams is the number one reason. His time with Monty Williams when Monty was an assistant with Oklahoma City. His time with Monty Williams when Monty Williams was an assistant with the Olympics, with Team USA. I think he really feels a connection to Monty Williams and wants to play there. And of course it has something to do with Devin Booker. Of course, that was his Olympic teammate in the last Olympics in Beijing. And about three Olympic games ago, Chris Paul was his teammate. I know that he wants to come here. Okay, that I'm buying that story 100%. So I'm putting the Suns at the top of the list. I would go Suns, Miami, Toronto. I do put Golden State on the list, although my bottom three I don't think happens. Brooklyn at number 5 and Boston at number 6. The Brooklyn one, again, I bring up what Kevin Perkins said yesterday. He thinks Durant is trying to help Kyrie Irving. Hey, trade me since you didn't give him a contract extension. Give Kyrie Irving a contract extension, well, then I'll stay and finish my contract. That's what KP thinks is going on. I think I said Kevin Perkins, didn't I? Sorry about that. Kendrick Perkins. I really like his side of it. I like his thinking. I'm not buying this one, though. I'm not buying it. I think he really wants out. And I think he's just tired of the drama that went on there. But it does have to make you pause that if he got sick of Oklahoma City, he got sick of Golden State, and he got sick of Brooklyn. What really makes you think it's going to go perfectly well with him here in Phoenix? You know? I mean, when you're on your fourth marriage, maybe you were the problem in the first three? I mean, could we agree on that? You know, if it was just one team, hey, I got sick of Oklahoma City. Okay, I get it. If it's two teams, well, you know, maybe you went for the money and then didn't like the situation. You realized you were wrong. Okay, whatever. You're not selling me on the third. When you need out of the third, especially when you were conniving to bring in a super team, and now you want to leave, that bugs me. It'll always bug me. You're under contract. Nothing wrong with asking for a trade as long as you keep it quiet. This certainly has not been kept quiet. So that's the latest on Kevin Durant. Brooklyn slow play. My opinion that he's still on track to be a Sun. The DeAndre Ayton situation could be a little different. I really question who's out there for DeAndre Ayton. Is he really being this kind to the Suns to agree to wait before he signs with another team so he could possibly be part of a trade with Kevin Durant? Here's why that is plausible. The Suns can match any deal that DA signs with another team. And they can also keep him if he signs the qualifying offer. Or they just set him scot-free and everything's fine. Well, if it's not a sign and trade, DA makes less money with his new team. DA can sign a 4-year deal with his new team. He can sign a 5-year deal if he signs with the Suns, and the Suns then in turn trade him, thus the sign and trade. So I really believe that DeAndre Ayton is saying, you know what? I want to do the sign and trade because I want the money. I want Max and I want the money. And then it becomes which team is willing to help the Suns get Kevin Durant. If you're not willing to provide draft picks to me, the Suns, to give to Brooklyn, or just to flat out go straight and give these to Brooklyn, then we're not interested in helping you acquire DeAndre Ayton. We're not interested in helping DeAndre Ayton make more money. We just want him gone then. In those scenarios, we just want him gone. I think James Jones is playing this really well. We'll know more next week coming out of Vegas. But right now, things look good. One rumor has the Indiana Pacers jumping in and being the lead dog for DeAndre Ayton. And they're not all that excited about paying further on the contract of Miles Turner. Some people think you could get a player as good as Miles Turner. You trade DA for Miles Turner. Now, obviously, you wouldn't do that under normal circumstances. You're not going to call him up and say, hey, I'll trade you DA for Miles Turner. But what you would do is when you're forced, when your hands are tied and you are going to be losing your number one pick overall in DeAndre Ayton, you have two options. He signs for 4 years with the Pacers and you get nothing. Or you pull off a sign and trade. He's happy because he gets more money and you get Miles Turner. You get a starting center. Listen, that's a formidable lineup. You go with CP3 at the point guard, D-Book at the 2, KD at the 3. I would make Mikal Bridges play the 4 and Miles Turner at the 5. I think you could win a championship doing that. Keep your bench. As long as you still have Cam Johnson, I think you're going to lose Mikal Bridges. Hopefully it's flipped because of Mikal's defense. Sorry, Cam. I love you, kid. But, you know, You've learned this for a while now. Business is business. Looks like with DA, if I do the same thing ranking Kevin Durant's teams, I'm hearing a lot with Utah. So I'll go Utah 1, Pacers 2. I'll go Suns 3 and Houston 4 as the potential destinations of where DeAndre Ayton is going to go. So this is the Thursday edition of Staring Down NBA. I admit it's going to be similar tomorrow, and it'll be the number one story, but I'll have new pieces of information for you as I beat up the phone lines and text a bunch of people so I can always be able to provide you something with NBA free agency that you're not going to get anywhere else. Real quick, before we talk hardcore Pac-12, this is kind of shocking. Rory McIlroy has been leading the charge against LIV Golf and calling them duplicitous, never like flat out name calling, but you know, saying they've been dishonest to him and he's really frustrated over it. See if you hear a much more conciliatory tone when he was asked at the Scottish Open about what's been created and the distance and the problems that LIV Golf has started.
People are wanting to spend that much money in the game of golf. That's wonderful. I just wish that we could have got to a point where they were spending that money with the existing structure that has existed for many decades within golf instead of being this big disruptor. But at the end of the day, I think it will sort itself out, and everyone has to pivot and change and try to adapt and be better, and hopefully we get to that stage. But as you said, right now it's sort of messy, and it's all the narrative isn't good. It's splitting the game instead of everyone coming together, and I think everyone needs to try to come together a little bit more.
I don't think Rory turned his back on me. We don't even know each other. But I was really let down by that. Some of you might go the complete opposite direction. After being the lead dog attacking LIV Golf, you might say, boy, that's really classy of him to back off a little bit, feel bad, and say, hey, we need to come together. We need to have a conversation. We need to talk this out. I don't agree with that opinion because I don't want them to talk it out. The PGA Tour creates competition. The PGA Tour makes it hard, and I want it hard. I want you to be the best in the world. I want to see the best in the world, and I want to see them play under the pressure that winning and losing means something. No matter how much they pay you on the LIV Golf Tour, winning and losing doesn't mean anything. There's no FedEx Cup Championship. There's no legendary major that you're trying to get into by winning a tournament somewhere else. And then most importantly, Rory, it's the money itself. I mean, you said if they wanted to spend this much money, I wish they would have spent it within the original structures. Well, for me, the problem with that is we go right back to taking the Saudi Arabian money, which is the whole point of the frustration. Now, I will grant you, they're spending this money to do what's called sports washing. Not watching, washing. In which we have a horrible reputation. We may or may not murder people. Sorry about that. We just murder people. Sorry. And so now we're going to create these exciting golf tournaments so everybody thinks, wow, you know what? That Saudi Arabian government's not as bad as we thought. Yeah, sure, they messed up and they killed a journalist and flew planes into buildings, but it's a long time ago. I'm sure those people, it wasn't that traumatic of a loss for them. So, cheers to LIV Golf. Okay, I realize Rory's not going that far, but you can sense my frustration with it. I wanted it to be a fight to the death and wanted the fans to choose the PGA Tour. So the question with Rory's tone now, is he being conciliatory because he knows they're going to lose? I mean, is it going to be so many golfers goes to LIV Golf that the PGA Tour is a minor league? And now that he's realized that, he's trying to save the PGA Tour? Or is it a case where it's hard being Rory, having all of his former friends or friends now that aren't quite as close ripping him for what he said? And he doesn't like that. I don't know. But Rory, I wish you stay strong. Don't let up. I don't want olive branches to LIV Golf in any way. The other story that's coming into the Scottish Open is Tiger Woods. And it's the 150th anniversary of the Open Championship, otherwise known as by Americans, the British Open. That's next weekend, not this weekend. And with it being the 150th, and with it being played on the old course at St. Andrews, if you don't know, St. Andrews is the home of golf. It's where the game was invented. It's kind of a funny story. It originally was 20 holes, 10 holes going out, because 10 is a nice round number. So 10 holes going out and 10 holes coming back. Then the club, St. Andrews, needed some money. And so they decided to sell what were holes, in a sense, 10 and 11, the last two holes. And since they're right side by side, it's, you know, all the holes on the left, 1 through 10, all the holes on the left coming back the other way when you turn around, 11 through 20, and they're all side by side to each other. Some of them even share a green. Well, since the club needed money, they sold the land of 10 and 11. That made it go from a 20-hole course to an 18-hole course. And that's why all of us play 18 holes now. All because of, oh, we just needed money. We wanted 20 holes. We needed money, so we made it 18. It's that simple. Well, the legend of that course, the history, and Tiger already having won an Open Championship at St. Andrews, his whole focus was, if I'm coming back from this injury, I'm playing St. Andrews. And it's that reason that he didn't play the U.S. Open, because he said he was injured so bad, he didn't think he could play in the U.S. Open and heal up in time for the British. So it's kind of hard to make this out, but the first words were, the plan was to play the U.S. Open.
Plan was play the U.S. Open, but physically I was not able to do that. There's no way physically I could have done that. I had some issues with my leg, and it would have put this tournament in jeopardy, and so there's no reason to do that. This is a pretty historic Open that we're going to be playing. I'm lucky enough to be part of the past champions that have won there and want to play there again. And I don't know when they're ever going to go back. Well, I'm still able to play at a high level, and I want to be able to give it, you know, at least one more run at a high level. To have won the Open Championship, and then for me specifically to have won it at the home of golf, is even more special. As Jack says, your career is not complete unless you won an Open Championship at the home of golf. And I feel like he's correct in that regard.
On the surface, that's a pretty ridiculous comment there at the end. Your career is not complete until you've won an Open Championship at St. Andrews. Because they only play it at that course once every 5 years. They rotate it among all other courses in throughout the United Kingdom that have been chosen to qualify. So when you say that, like, you're only going to be there once every 5 years. Hardly anybody has a legitimate shot of winning it. But when it's Jack and Tiger saying it, two guys that have done it, you're kind of like, well, okay, I get that for you guys. But you can't say nobody else has had a complete career. Tom Watson, I think he won it at St. Andrews, so never mind. Maybe his career is, never mind. Okay, I check that. But I don't know. I think you could not win that, and you can win a lot of other majors, and you've had a complete career. And what if you win the Open Championship somewhere else? Is it still not complete, but you've got the Claret Jug? I do disagree with Tiger there, but I admit, I don't have a lot of ground to stand on this argument, since he's a little bit more of an authority figure on this. All right, coming up next, I got a lot to tell you about the Pac-12 and the future of ASU and U of A. This is Doug Franz Unplugged. Boy, there's a lot of moving parts right now when it comes to the Big Ten, Big 12, SEC, and even the reports of what's going on. What I'm going to tell you now, it's a combination of my own speculation, a couple very good people that have been nice to me to share with me some information, what other people would call sources. I would just call them friends. And then some of it is just me reading articles and watching SportsCenter. So I'm not going to tell you which is which, because that way I can protect people. But I see it now, what we're looking at. And here's where the options are starting to come in, okay? I think that ASU is trying to balance two things at the same time. What they want to happen, but how they have to protect themselves. I believe ASU 100% wants to stay in the Pac-12, but they want to stay with a committed Oregon and Washington. And if they don't feel like they've got a committed Oregon and Washington, they want to jump to the Big 12. That's how I feel what's happening right now with ASU. And that does make a lot of sense. So how do you get them to really commit? They can say they're committed all that they want. How can you get Oregon and UW to commit? The way you get them to commit is to do something similar of what's going on in the ACC. I hope you don't think this is boring, but in order to understand the future of ASU or U of A, you kind of have to know this. The ACC wanted to show incredible strength and go straight after the money. So they jumped at the first offer they could get. This is probably 4 years ago, maybe. And then they signed a deal through 2036. And every member of the ACC had to accept that if they leave, all of the money that they generate from their television contract goes to the ACC. Now, here's what matters in this point. Whenever ASU has a home game, they are bound by the conditions set forth by the Pac-12 of who televises that game, where the money goes. Notre Dame, they own their own rights. They're not in a conference. So NBC pays them an exorbitant fee to broadcast every home game. But when Notre Dame goes on the road, they don't have the rights to that game. That game is then broadcast on the conditions of what's been set forth by the home team and the contracts they've agreed to. And 99% of the time, it's whatever their conference says. Imagine ASU hosting a huge game. Let's say they bring USC back on campus. You got a huge game against USC coming up. You can imagine all the television companies want to broadcast that game. And imagine none of that money coming to the Pac-12. You'd be playing for free. I mean, sure, you get your money, but you know, the tickets and beer and stuff like that. But what I mean is you don't get the money from anything to do with the flight. All of that television money that's paid in a sense to you is going right through you to your old conference. That's what the ACC did. And that lasts until 2036. Now, the reason why that becomes important is you could sign a deal like that. And if UW and Oregon are willing to sign it, then they're not going to jump ship. If ASU and the other teams of the Pac-12 can get Oregon and UW to agree to a deal like that, they're going to go forward with the Pac-12. They are going to look at expansion. San Diego State's a possibility. Boise State's a possibility. You could even be crazy and make a run at BYU if you want to. I don't think that's a good idea, but maybe you do. I haven't heard anybody discuss Air Force Academy. I think that's kind of a cool idea. But that's where this stands. Then they'll take their opportunity and they'll create a partnership with the ACC in which the ACC and the Pac-12 schedule each other all the time in non-conference games in almost every sport. And then you hope that that dramatically increases the package of television rights for the Pac-12 to say, listen, we're going to have Clemson coming here. We're going to have North Carolina coming to U of A for basketball. We're going to have Bobby Hurley going back to Cameron Indoor. Don't you want to pay extra for these rights in an ACC Pac-12 partnership? And that is what would keep the conference together. Do I think that would work? Actually, I do. As long as the Big Ten doesn't raid the ACC, which is a very big possibility. I easily could see the Big Ten taking Oregon, taking UW, taking Virginia, taking UNC, and taking Duke. And then sitting back and praying Notre Dame finally joins. And they get put in the Big Ten. That's what I think the Big Ten wants to do. So if you're the Pac-12, do you really trust the ACC schools to stay in that alliance? And if you do, you make that move. If you're ASU and U of A and you don't trust Oregon and UW, or they say they want to stay committed to the conference, but they won't sign an agreement like the ACC has, then I think you've got to go to the Big 12. Because think about that agreement. If Oregon's television money is owned by the Pac-12 and they leave for the Big 10, Oregon's got a huge game against Ohio State. Oregon could have a huge game against USC again as a Big 10, isn't that weird? A Big 10 game between Oregon and USC. That could happen. If it does, imagine all that money going to the Pac-12. Two Pac-12 teams playing that aren't Pac-12 teams anymore. But their money goes to the Pac-12 because Oregon agreed to the deal. I don't think Oregon would break that. They might not sign it, but I don't think they would ever break that contract. So what do? You get them to sign it. And if they don't sign it, you don't ask anymore, you just leave. Because the entire stability of the conference is based on your two most attractive programs sticking around, and that's Oregon and UW. You know who's the biggest loser in this? It's probably going to be Oregon State, Washington State. I'm thinking they end up as Hawaii's rival in the Mountain West. I'm thinking ASU and U of A will come to the agreement that they don't trust Oregon and UW, and they want to go to the Big 12. Then it becomes who's joining them. I totally believe it's a package deal of ASU, U of A, and I would even say Colorado, Utah. I think all four of them come in together. Now, does the Big 12 want Stanford? Does the Big 12 want Cal? Do they care about Oregon State and Washington State? I don't know why you would. So I think it's going to be ASU, Colorado, and Utah and U of A all going to the Big 12. I believe the Big 10 will take Oregon, UW, Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia. And I think the rest of the ACC will kind of fall apart. The SEC would probably take Clemson. They might not. A lot of people just assume, oh, they'll take Clemson. I'm not going to say that they will, because you've already got a team in South Carolina, the South Carolina Gamecocks. So Clemson doesn't really add a state to your coverage. Now, it probably adds eyeballs because of all the Clemson fans. But in truth, if you shun them and they don't go to the Big Ten, they're not going to make as much money. So then can they keep up with the SEC and the Big Ten? That's an interesting gamble. I think the SEC definitely takes Florida State and Miami. But as you watch this unfold, the key thing to keep your eye on if you're an ASU fan is anytime you see something on Twitter, Facebook, or you hear a story about Oregon and UW and where they're at in the conference shuffle of realignment, that'll tell you the future of ASU. I can almost guarantee you that. All right, one quick story on the NFL before I get to D-backs. I think this is hilarious. Ben McAdoo was a coach with the New York Giants, and he gets fired, and he's got a good relationship, I'm assuming, with somebody at either the New York Post. I think it was the Post that did this. So this is way back in 2018. They ask him, hey, since you're unemployed and you don't have skin in this game, will you do us a favor and rank the quarterbacks of the 2018 draft? Listen to how well he ranked them. So this is documented. This is in a 2018 article. He said Josh Allen was the best of the group. He said Lamar Jackson was number two. You talk about crushing it. He said Sam Darnold was three, Josh Rosen was four, and you'll never guess who number five is. Mason Rudolph. He thought Mason Rudolph would be better than number six, Baker Mayfield. So in that crazy draft, he said Baker Mayfield was the worst of the six quarterbacks. And keep in mind, not only was Mayfield chosen number one overall, but Mason Rudolph wasn't even chosen in the first round. So he wrote that he thought Baker Mayfield is worse than a guy that wasn't drafted in the first round of that draft. Now, here's why I bring this up. Remember, I told you it was Ben McAdoo. Do you know what his job is now? He's not a talent evaluator for a newspaper anymore. He's the Carolina offensive coordinator. if there's ever a guy that appears on the outside as to be way oversensitive, it's Baker Mayfield. How's that going to go when he's coaching the guy he thought was the third best quarterback and the guy he thought was the sixth best quarterback in a plentiful quarterback draft? That's, to me, that's funny. If Baker ever finds out about it. Like two other quarterbacks, I think they would go, okay, whatever. You know, it's about here and now, and I've already played 5 years in the league, so anything I did in college doesn't matter. You know, you'd feel like that. Baker being a sensitive dude, it might propel him to greatness. He might fall on his face. I'm going to vote the latter. Coming up next, tiny bit of Coyotes. Some great things that the D-backs did, and they lost. It's next on Doug Franz Unplugged. No rant today on the Arizona Diamondbacks. I don't have a rant. And the reason why is I'm not totally distraught on this one. You know, there's been a lot of games and a lot of stretches of games where I look at the D-backs and I say, you're finding ways to lose. You know, drive the ball the other way. Pitch to contact and play, and field your position. You know, and when you're not doing one of those things, you're finding ways to lose. If you didn't see yesterday's game, Diamondbacks had lead most of the game. Mantiply blows it by giving up a two-run homer. How often is that going to happen? Now, you can kind of blame Torey Lovello, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But when your best reliever is on the mound and he gets beat, and you're able to get the bases loaded and battle back in the ninth inning and your comeback falls just short, that's okay with me. I mean, of course it's not okay 162 times. There's not moral victories. You didn't morally win anything. A moral victory is when you pray before you sin. Okay, that's a moral win. Hey, good job. You were able to push off whatever the temptation was that was going on. You're living a better life. Here we go. That's a moral victory. As opposed to immoral victories, which I don't really want to know what that is. What happened? I had an immoral victory. Oh, okay. But when you look at what happened with the Diamondbacks, it's not a moral victory, but it is a point in time where what else do you want? They had the offense, they had the defense, they had the base running, and their best got beat. All right, move forward. Moving on. That's not a big deal. That's going to happen. But I also love what I'm hearing from the team. I heard through the grapevine Christian Walker, who had a 10-pitch at-bat, bottom of the ninth inning, to coax a walk and load the bases. I heard he had a little something to say after the game. Because the Diamondbacks in this game dominated early on, then their bats fell asleep for four innings. And he wanted to wake people up a little bit. So we have an emerging leader. I think Christian Walker has been somewhat hesitant to lead because he's never really been that much older than the team. Now, suddenly, he's kind of a vet. So he stood up and said something. And you have two amazing comments in the last week, one by Zach Allen on Sunday and one yesterday by Merrill Kelly after his win was blown by the bullpen. I'll get into all those points in a minute, but let me give you Torey Lovello first.
A lot went right for a large portion of this game. It's just things unwound a little bit in the eighth and the ninth inning. But if I'm going to look at the entire body of work, I got to look at the three-game series and say, look, we played some good baseball. We did a lot of good things. I think our offense has figured out some really key concepts about keeping the line moving, handing it off to the next guy, putting up some crooked numbers. We got an outstanding pitching performance by Merrill. Yeah, we just made some mistakes. They matched up against us, and we got clipped. That happens in this game. But you know, as frustrating as it was for those last couple innings, we set that aside. We built the inning in the ninth. We were a hit away. I thought we just had quality at bat after quality at bat against a very good closer with some aggressive stuff, and we didn't shut down. And I was really proud of that today.
I'm in a weird spot. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I totally agree with what Torey Lovello just said. All of it. My only problem is I don't want him being that positive. They've had too many opportunities where they haven't done what they did yesterday. So I don't want him happy about it. I'm okay being happy about it, which totally makes me a hypocrite. But Torrey, we needed more from you, actually. The reason why I say we needed more from Torrey, I don't think it was the right decision to bring in Mantiply. I totally agree with bringing in Mantiply in that exact situation, exact same hitter, everything. If Mantiply's fresh or a little worn, but you just had a two-inning outing the other day, had a rest, and then he pitched yesterday, I think you're overexposing him a little bit. And I think he needed another day of rest, and I think it showed. And I think you've got to anticipate that. I think it was the wrong move to bring in Mantiply because of the workload. And no, I'm not being soft. I'm not saying, no, a professional athlete might be tired. Let's not bring him in. I'm not acting like that at all. I'm saying, I don't think he's going to have his best stuff. I don't think he's going to be as effective. And I would rather pitch a 90% pitcher from the bullpen than a 60% Mantiply. Now, truth be told, he doesn't have a lot of options right now. I'm not trying to make this out to be Torrey's an idiot. Torrey cost him the whole game. I do think that decision cost him the game, though. I do. But I'm not sure that deciding who else you would have brought in would have worked. I can't guarantee you that. So this isn't one of those where Torrey had a blatant screw up, but I disagree with him. I think it was the wrong move to bring in Mantiply. Torrey, on the other hand, completely disagrees with me.
Yeah, it was a big ask. I know that, but I felt like at that point in time, I was budgeting that he was gonna turn around some of those hitters and he was gonna get that group of guys and. Yeah, I thought he could make quality pitches and get out of the situation, and it just didn't happen. Zero hesitancy for me. He's been doing it all year long for us. Made a mistake with the breaking ball in the middle of the plate, and that was a difference.
Well, I'm not saying you should have lacked confidence in him. When you say there's zero hesitancy, though, that worries me a little, because if you have zero hesitancy when it appears he's had a heavy workload lately, I think this is going to be the result more often than. I'm not saying you protect him. You don't put Mantiply in a bubble. But when you pitch him two innings in a row and he goes 40 innings, I don't think you then use him next day, break next day. I think you either go break next day, or you go break before you play him back-to-back. So difference of opinion. Again, I don't know if they would have won following mine, but I know they would have lost doing Torrey's. Now, this is what I was talking about with what was said by Zach Gallen and what was said by Merrill Kelly. If you didn't remember or you didn't hear about it, on Sunday, Diamondbacks had a lead against the Rockies, bullpen blew it. Offense kind of went into a shell after they had a lead and didn't tack on. What happened yesterday? Diamondbacks get a 4-0 lead, and they don't tack on again until the ninth. So similar to Crone hitting 2 3-run homers to win the game in Colorado, the Diamondbacks get themselves a 4-0 lead, sit back, do nothing. Giants take the lead, and then the Diamondbacks have a great comeback, but it falls short. So after Sunday's game, in which Zach Gallen pitched, he wasn't happy-go-lucky. You know, a lot of pitchers will say stuff like, well, you know, I gave it my best shot. I just wanted to win for the ball club. Too bad that we couldn't get a win. But, you know, there's going to be games where I don't have my best stuff, and the offense pulls it out for me. So, you know, hey, I just did what I could. You know, and you'll act like you're not that upset, even though you are. Zach Gallen did not play that game. Zach Gallen specifically said there's going to be games like this that if we want to get to where we want to go, we've got to win games like this. I didn't take that as a guy being selfish and saying, you cost me my win. I took that as a guy being a leader. So now you have the context of the exact same thing happening to Merrill Kelly just 4 days later.
Obviously, it's frustrating. You know, kind of what Gallon said the other day, it's like those are type of games that if we're trying to get to where we want to be, those are definitely games that we have to win. But on the flip side, you know, it's still a series win. Took two out of three, played three really good games. You know, just today kind of got away from us.
He balanced those 2 points out really well. Really well. Think about how he handled that. Hey, just like Zach said, if we're going to get to where we want to go, these are the games that we have to win. However, the game just got away from us. We did a lot of good things. Well said by Merrill Kelly. Now, this next one from Merrill Kelly, if you didn't see the game, I got to let you know of something. A fan in left field, I don't know for sure if they got the call right. I'm assuming they know what they're doing. But he reached his hand over the wall, didn't think he had extended it, caught a ball, and turned it into a home run. On review, they ruled it a double. So it would have been a home run given up by Merrill Kelly. And instead, it's ruled a double and a run scored. Instead of it being a lot worse. So the scenario is Joey Bart, who's a poor hitting catcher, is at the plate. And he's got runners on first and second. Diamondbacks are up 4-0. And now Bart seemingly hits a three-run homer. So that's bad. You're only up by a run. But they go to review. They decide it is fan interference. And then that specific play is only an RBI double. Now, Lamont Wade Jr. is next up, and he hits into a potential double play ball. They're not able to turn it. And he gets an RBI on a ground out, on a fielder's choice. So they're still able to knock in both of the runners that were on base when Joey Bart batted. But Joey Bart never scored as he would have on the home run. And that's why I think this is funny, is I've never heard a pitcher say thanks to a fan before. He was asked, how did you feel about your outing?
Outing was good. You know, just the pitch to Crawford kind of jumps out of my mind. Decent pitch, but he does a pretty good job turning on balls inside. If it would have been a little higher, I think it would have beat him. But he put a good swing on it. The walks obviously came back to bite me a little bit. Shout out to that fan for catching that ball and not making it a homer. That one definitely helped out a bunch. He put a good swing on that ball. When he first caught it, I thought it looked a little weird, but I'm glad that we took a look at it. I'm glad that the call that was made was made.
That's pretty good. When he talked about Brandon Crawford, the ball that he hit, that was the double. That was the a one-out double that got the rally started. So he doesn't love that pitch and then appreciates the fan because he said Joey Bart put a good swing on it. So Merrill Kelly looked good. And then in the ninth, Diamondbacks have an amazing comeback. I shouldn't say amazing when you don't actually finish the comeback. But Perdomo leads it off with a walk. And then next two guys get out, which stinks, especially when it's West Side. Josh Rojas gets an out. He did go 1-for-4 with an RBI, though. Alec Thomas coaxes a pretty clutch walk for a young kid. Ketel Marte, RBI single, so it's now 7-5, Diamondbacks trail. And Christian Walker, to me, gave a great lesson to the team. A 10-pitch walk that he battled like crazy. So two outs, bottom of the ninth, you're down by two. And you are the winning run. You're the winning run at the plate. And instead of being so jacked up to try to hit a homer, you just hang in there and you battle and you battle and you don't give up. That's awesome. That's leadership and that's a lesson. That's why I think a lot of good things happen. Unfortunately, with the bases loaded, Jordan Luplow came up. Boom, 1-2-3, strike three, and it's over. And that was the end of the game. Let's see if they can carry this on. Rockies are not good. You didn't do enough up in Coors Field. So what are you going to do now? 4-game series, tonight 6:40. Let's do something. Real quick, Coyotes, before I do versus Vegas, I sit here in utter disbelief. I mean, there's no way this is really true. And it is. Schedule came out yesterday. I want to read this to you. Coyotes start 6-game road trip going through the East Coast. Come home. Game, the home opener is October 28th against Winnipeg. And they have a 4-game homestand. Okay. After the 4-game homestand, they play Washington in Washington on November 5th. So they got a road trip. Their last home game of the road trip is December 7th. I told you they start the road trip on November 5th. This is their road trip. At Washington, at Buffalo, at the Islanders. Back-to-back at New Jersey, at Rangers. Then they cross that ever-popular New York, Las Vegas, New York-Nevada border and have a game in Vegas. Yes, at Islanders, at Jersey, at Rangers, at Vegas. Now, where do you think they go next? After crossing the New York-Nevada border, they then cross the Nevada-Tennessee border. Who makes this stuff up? So at Washington, at Buffalo, at Islanders, at New Jersey, at Rangers, at Vegas, at Nashville, at Carolina, at Detroit, at Minnesota, then go all the way to LA, at LA, and now do the Western Canada road trip of Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton. A 14-game road trip. I'm not necessarily blaming the league because I'm 100% confident it has something to do with the ASU arena. And it's the Coyotes' fault for wanting to play in a 5,000-seat arena. But oh my gosh, did you not know that was going to happen? I mean, we're talking about not even seeing your family. How are you going to get stuff in between? You've got 4 days between Rangers and Vegas, so I guess you're going to go home to Phoenix, spend a day, and then go on to Vegas. This is just insane, though. November 5th until December 7th, Coyotes on the road. It's time for
versus Vegas.
We're ignoring any call you have to dance. Yeah. No chance. It's bad. 2-5 yesterday. 2-5. Oh my gosh. And I don't know if you've had one of these days. I started 0-3, which just really punches you in the face. When you start 0-3, it's like, nah, come on. And then I was begging for some help. Got it. Got 2 wins. So I was 2-3. And then I lost the last 2 games. Oh. I had White Sox and Cubs both losing as underdogs. They didn't. They both won. Minnesota favored on the run line. White Sox beat them 9-8. Milwaukee favored on the run line. Cubs beat them 2-1. Hey, thanks, guys. I dominated my Toronto-Oakland pick. Normally, I don't take an over in Oakland because of the foul territory. I said, no, the way Toronto's hitting, we'll be good here. So I took Toronto-Oakland over the 8.5. Toronto won 2-1. Oakland won 2-1. They're not even close to 9 runs. Then I got the 2 games right. I told you about Ohtani. I really liked that game. So I had the Angels covering the 1.5 run line. They won 5-2. And I love the pitching matchup going on in St. Louis, going on in Atlanta against St. Louis. So I took the under 8.5. Braves shut them out 1-3-0. Felt really good about that. So now I battled back. I'm 2-3 on the day, you know? I can get to 4-3 and have a winning day. No, I can't. Easy pick. Houston over Kansas City to cover the run line. No, it wasn't. Kansas City won 7-4. Easy pick. Diamondbacks. I'm telling you, it was lined up well, and I'm getting a 1.5. So I took the underdog Diamondbacks at home. I dominate the whole game until when it matters, San Francisco wins 7-5. I butchered that one. So the record drops to now 60 games above 500, 374 and 314. And I got five games for you tonight. I'm going back to this Astros-Royals well because the Royals are pitching one of the worst pitchers in baseball. The problem is the run line is at 2.5. So step up. I don't care. Astros are going to win by 3. So I'll take the Astros at home against the Royals minus the 2.5. I got Philadelphia, who has a bad pitcher going, to cover the 1.5 against Washington. The catch is Washington has the worst pitcher in the National League going. I don't know why he's still pitching. So that one's kind of easy for me. I got the White Sox up against one of the worst pitchers in the American League in Detroit, Bo Brisky. So White Sox cover the 1.5 run line. I'm sticking with the Diamondbacks. Sticking with the D-backs today. So I've got them plus a 1.5 against Colorado. And the Dodgers are home against the Cubs, in which the Cubs just flew into town last night. And I get Gonsolin pitching, who has just been incredible this year. So those are my picks for today. I'm going with all favorites except the Diamondbacks. Astros, Phillies, White Sox, and Dodgers all cover the run line, with the Astros having to cover 2.5. Diamondbacks using the runs, beating Colorado. That's it for today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged. Thanks for being a member of the Unplugged Army. I hope you don't mind if I always roll the credits at the end. It's just these people mean so much to me. You get let go, you don't know where your direction is. And Mikey at Bell's National Kitchen says, I'm with you through till the end of this thing. Let's go. I mean, that's just awesome. And all you have to do to help me out is to eat the best sandwich in all of Arizona. I mean, it's kind of a cool deal, isn't it? Get yourself the Nashville Hot Chicken Sandwich. You can also go to Rosati's, but only the one on Ray and McQueen. If you own a Rosati's and you listen to Doug Franz Unplugged, hey, feel free to chip in. And I'll plug your Rosati's too. But it's only the one in Chandler on Ray and McQueen that's a sponsor of Doug Franz Unplugged. Burrito Express, home of the unbelievable breakfast burrito. Perfect. Just perfection. All wrapped in a burrito. Angel, there's your new tagline. Perfection wrapped in a shell. I kind of like that. Shell wrapped perfection. That's not bad. Tortilla wrapped perfection. There you go. I like that. I like that new tagline for Burrito Express. 6022 Repair is the phone number for Parker and Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. And 602-899-7000 is the phone number for everybody at Ideal Home Loans to help you get yourself out of credit card debt. Pretty jacked up for tomorrow's show. Kevin Guy, head coach of the Arizona Rattlers, will join us. And I'll get one of the interviews I do today edited, and we'll listen to a Diamondback player as well. Possibly Zach Gallen is somebody that I'd really like to talk to because I saw some hardcore leadership from him in what he had to say about Sunday's loss. So I'll get that working. And Hugh Hallman will join us next week. I interviewed him today. He is the former mayor of Tempe to give you more insight in what's going on between the airport and Tempe. My friends, I'm going to earn that pillow tonight, and I'm going to earn that beer on Beer Friday, and so will you. I'll see you tomorrow.